Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
This is Jerry Pippin, and we are at the end of the Ozarks in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Springtime, except not here. It's a little cool. Wendell, how are you?
Oh, just fine.
This is Wendell Stevens, our guest, and it's always good to have you on. Wendell, I was trying to count the number of books you wrote the other day. I it seems to me it's up in the 70s.
No, 51.
51. Well, that's still that's unbelievable amount. Are you writing anything right now?
Putting things together. You know, I don't write books. I don't sit down and write a book. And they're not well written. They don't have an introduction, a build-up to a climax, and a close. They're narrative reports like I used to write military reports, where you have to put everything in the report. You don't hold anything back.
And of course, you had quite a military career, and we talked about that, and you didn't see a UFO until you got out.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And you spent a little time at Wright Field, which is Wright-Patterson now.
Yes,
right?
Early on I was there in the flight test division.
Yeah. Well, now, what did you talk about this time here at the conference?
I talked about an event that happened way back in the 50s, late 50s, when I was assigned to George Air Force Base at Victorville, California. And I went there for a new assignment as commander of the repair squadron in a fighter wing. And in my first meeting with my staff people in the new squadron, a warrant officer that was in charge of the electronics shop came up to me that evening, said, I hear you're you're interested in UFOs. I said, oh, yes, I am. He said, well, I have a little gathering, a group that gathers at my home on Friday nights occasionally. And if you'd like to come by, we're going to be meeting this Friday weekend, Friday evening. You're welcome. I said, oh, I'd love to. And I went by, and I found that their channel was Richard Miller. And I had never heard of Richard Miller. I didn't know anything about him at all. He was a young man that had an experience early in his teens. Mm-hmm. And he was working in electronics up in the Detroit area, and he hunted for discussion groups because he was trying to get more information on his own sighting earlier. And he had been invited to an elderly home where a group of people had pooled resources, bought a ticket for George Hunt Williamson to come in from Prescott, Arizona, and demonstrate his channeling of the Space Brothers. And Richard was there that night. He worked all day, and he was tired, and he leaned against the piano leg. Well, there wasn't enough chairs for everybody, so he left the chairs for the older people and just sat down leaning against the piano leg. And as the conversation went on, they were drinking coffee and talking. He got a little more tired, and he leaned back under the piano, and then he laid down on his back. When they got through, the older folks got through talking and over their donuts, and George Hunt Williamson lay down on the sofa to do his thing. He took his three deep breaths, and his body jerked, and the Space Brothers came through. At the same time, Richard Miller, laying on the floor under the piano, jerked, and the same voice came through him. And now we had a transmission in stereo coming through two different mouths, the same voice, the same communication, same words and everything.
So they're channeling.
They were channeling, simultaneously channeling the same entity.
Okay.
Which was a remarkable thing.
It
astounded me. So after that, the elderly folks tried to get Richard to do it again, and he couldn't do it for a number of tries. And then finally he got a breakthrough, and he did do it again. And he told the Space Brothers that he didn't remember anything about the earlier one when he channeled. He was completely out. And after it was over and there was a commotion around him, woke him up, he said, when is he going to start? They said, he's already started and he's over with and you were in it. Well, so now he's trying to put himself in the same frame of mind he was in then. Mm-hmm. And he finally succeeded, made a deal with the Solar Cross Brothers. If they would let him, he would continue channeling if they would let him set aside and remember everything that transpired. So they did. He said that it was kind of like they would move in, set him aside in his head and take over the motor forces and do the channeling. And he could watch and see everything that they were doing.
So he was having kind of an out-of-body experience watching it.
But in-body,
right.
So then after that, they did this, and he could see what was happening and hear the conversation himself as it was transpiring. When they were through, they would move back out and let him put him back in charge again. And he did that for a long time. He became a better channel for the space for the Solar Cross brothers than George Hunt Williamson. And that's when I first heard him that night in that officer's house in my squadron. And that was it was mind-blowing at the time because I had never seen anything that clear, loud, and
you know, that's a long time back, and I just think of channeling in the last couple of decades, but I guess it's been around for a while.
Oh, yeah, it's been around forever, I guess.
evidently.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about what was said in this thing that you...
Well,
you
among other things, the Solar Cross brothers, and one evening they told us, advised us to collect a number of Light Classics records on the old 33 RPM mm-hmm. discs, platters, and they gave us about 15 titles, including Rites of Spring, Thus Spake Zarathustra, Tales from the Vienna Woods, Scheherazade, 1812 Overture. All those are Light Classics with no words. And so we finally got close to a dozen of them, and they were on a table one night in another session when the Solar Cross speaker at the time observed that we may have enough, they would see what they could do. And then they gave us a list of about 100 or more clips to take from these records in a very specific order. And we didn't know anything about music.
You're talking about the selections themselves.
Yeah, out of the stack of records
right.
on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know anything about music, didn't know how to take the clips out, but one of the sitters knew a sound shop in Hollywood that might be interested in. And so they took them down, the clips down there, the records and the list of clips.
Right.
Sound shop took them out nice and clean and put them together, and they brought it back up on a wire recorder. And we thought the Space Brothers were simply giving us a new medley of our old classics. And we were going to listen to it at the end of that session and hear the new medley. When, before the session ended, one of the speakers said, "Our brother, we have a surprise for you this evening. Our brother Monka will speak, and he will call for your music when he's ready." And then Monka's voice came on, and he said, "You may now start the music." And we started it, and he gave us a clean narrative for 47 minutes, perfectly coordinated to the music, perfectly timed, and with no speech defects whatever. Toastmasters rate a member of the club if they can do it for 5 minutes. They rate them and give them a standing. This was for 47 minutes. Now, during this time, Richard Miller was sitting there in a straight back chair at a table with his hands flat on the table in front of him, looking straight forward in a kind of a semi-trance. His eyes were about half closed. And he did this presentation in a lot of very specific language with no prompts at all, no cards, no notes, no nothing. And he didn't even turn his head, and he didn't look around. He was straight ahead, and he delivered it with no paused words like I'm doing, no mispronunciations, everything perfectly delivered for 47 minutes. That's something a human being cannot do. And this was done by an alien entity through a stranger using his vocal cords and giving a speech delivery with a lot of very complicated information in it.
Perfectly. What sort of information do you remember?
It was in that particular, the first one, they were describing a solar tour. They said, "We would like to tell you what you would see if you were aboard one of our ships taking a tour of your solar system." And they started from the sun and went out through all the planets, described the life existing on each one, and all but two actually had life on them. They said that there's life throughout our solar system, different forms, it's different, adapted to its own conditions, but still life there. And one of the interesting things, they said that the true origin of Earth's life was Jupiter.
Oh, really?
And we see, our astronomers see Jupiter as a gaseous body with so big that the acceleration of gravity to the surface is unbelievable.
Yeah, we weigh 2,000 pounds or more instead of 100.
But the life form there, the Space Brothers told us there is a solid surface under that gas level.
Okay.
And the solid surface does have a population, and they're happy there. They have a society and living there. And the life form from Jupiter was transported to Earth when Earth was ready for intelligent life. and it has evolved here since. But that they kept insisting that's our true origin of life on Earth.
Do you remember which two planets didn't have life?
Yeah, Pluto was one that had no native life, and I think it was Uranus has no native life, but it has a very prolific animal life and vegetation. Beings from other planets in the solar system go there for vacations. Those advanced beings that are able to make that trip and go there for vacations and enjoy the lakes and the rivers and the streams and the wildlife on that planet.
So when we talk about the life, I just saw an article this week, Life of Mars again, and laying out some artifacts and things. That doesn't surprise you.
Doesn't surprise me at all. Our communicator, the main communicator, the one that did this transmission, the solar tour, was Monca, who claims he comes from Mars, that Mars is inhabited, that the inhabitants live below the surface in manufactured cities, that they manufacture their own air and water, that they have an industrial society that is mechanized, that builds spaceships for some of the other planets. They say that Venus has no technical society, that the Martians build the spacecraft for the Venusians. And I found that interesting because that had come out in other contacts involving Venusians.
Well, what do you make of the thing we're told about Venus being so hot nobody could be there?
Well, that's what we see with our physical eyes.
Uh-huh.
And that's the physical chemical level of Venus. If we went there, that's what we would see, and that's what we see with our instruments too. But if we went there as a Venusian, we would find that the life wave lives at a different level. They don't live at the level we see with our physical eyes. They live at a level above that.
And so are you talking about other dimensions?
Or a higher dimensional
level.
And they, at their dimensional level where they live, they have trees and rivers and lakes and streams and flowers and plants, clouds in the sky and everything else like we have here.
But
it's of an other dimensional reality.
I guess what you're saying is it's another reality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not so far out from ours that the Venusians can't slow their vibrations down and interact with us physically and then speed them up again to their natural rate. They can do this mentally for a short time, like up to a half hour. But usually when we see them, they wear a little device on their belt that generates a field around them that slows their vibrations down. So they look physical when they're interacting with us. In the dark at night, they have a glow, but that's the field around them that's keeping them slowed down into the physical realm.
So when we talk about, and you and I talked about, the numbers of species many times, and they seem to be quite a few.
Infinite.
We're really talking about other worlds, other dimensions, other realities, too.
There are many other realities. Okay. It's like your radio has a lot of radio stations on it. Our solar system has a lot of different vibrational frequencies of being in this solar system and in other solar systems. You know, at my age of 84 now, I've come to the conclusion that space is the true habitat of humanity. That planets are nothing more than nests, incubation nests, where humanity is transported. They begin gathering their experience in their new vibrational nature, and they evolve a technology and produce spacecraft and eventually leave the planet never to return, like birds leaving the nest.
It's an interesting concept, and you've studied this subject for a long time, so I'm not going to debate you over that at all. We're talking with Wendell Stevens, and what you have some DVDs out now or CDs or something?
I had some CDs that were channeled transmissions. Actually, the solar tour was only the first one, and then we got 10 more, so we had 11 such transmissions perfectly coordinated to music. Besides the solar tour, which I presented here, there's a galactic tour. There's another one that describes the destruction of Maldek, the missing planet.
So when we listen to this CD, we hear the clips of the music and someone talking.
Perfectly coordinated to the music, yes.
And who recorded those, Richard?
We recorded them as a group sitting around Richard Miller, and I bought an expensive cassette recorder and made copies for myself at the time, and I... I was going through my stuff a couple of months ago, and I thought, discovered them again. And I thought, oh, those might be interesting to other people now. So I made copies on CDs, which wasn't too hard to do, and now they're available again on CD.
Fantastic. They can contact you and order these things,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, and we'll give that address and everything when we come back. This is Jerry Pippin. We're broadcasting from the end of the Ozarks. And Wendell Stevens, one of my favorite people. In fact, he's the first guy I ever heard on an interview. I don't remember whose interview it was. And I said, I need to talk to this guy. This is a long time ago.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, a lot of shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be back. I'm Jerry Pippin.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers, UFO and Alien Disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime. Anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com.
Wendell Stevens is our guest, and we're talking about some tapes that you made many years ago. You found recently, a couple of months ago, and you made a presentation here. And if people listening to the first segment, they're well aware what we're talking about. What other things are you doing right now? You said you don't write a book like sitting down and creating a plot or whatever.
No, I collect information, and I make memorandums to myself. Sometimes they run 10 or 15 pages, some of them even longer. And then when the file gets a couple inches thick, a couple hundred pages,
you think it's time for a book.
Then I think somebody else might like to know something about this, so I take the file of memorandums to myself out and write connecting paragraphs. Connecting narrative, and just put them all together. So I'm not really writing a book. I'm just reporting, and I report in a military sense where I gave all the facts, everything, name, days, plate, time, and everything. You know, it used to upset me to buy a book and get a story of a case in one paragraph, and then it'll go on to another paragraph and a capsule of another story. Not enough details, no true names, nothing to follow up on. I put everything out there so anybody that wants to do so can go look the person up. His address, his telephone numbers, everything is in my reports. Now they're older, so many of them have moved on, but I started out trying to report stuff that other people could check for and verify for themselves.
And now when we talk about all of these reports that you've done, these books, 50-some books or reports, which turned out to be books, do you have any that are really are your favorites? In other words, do they have? I know when we do research, each project we kind of fall in love with while we're doing it. But looking back over the years, what are some of your favorite cases?
Well, I like the Reticulum case that began with a born again Christian back in South Carolina in where they have the blue laws. Movie theaters don't even open on Sundays,
right.
And grocery stores don't open either, just convenience markets. And the witness was a born-again Christian that had a military academy education. He did not have a high level of education. He married his buddy's sister, and they had a little family, lived in a trailer, but he would have laughed at anybody trying to tell him a UFO story. He never wouldn't read it in the papers. He didn't buy any magazines, he didn't look at any books, he thought it was all really bunk. And then it happened to him. He began seeing a strange light driving home from work at night, and the light kept coming closer and closer till it passed over his car so low he could have thrown a rock and hit it. And then his neighbors around him in the trailer park began to see the same light overhead too, and they began to call it his friend. And one night a neighbor lady came to his house to borrow a cup of sugar, and when his wife looked out, the craft was making its triangular patterns in the sky out there. And he went to the door, looked over the head, said, "By golly, it is." He said, "I think I'll get my jacket and go out and get a closer look." He put his jacket on, put binoculars over his shoulders, and went out across a little ditch and up on a railroad track to get a better look at it. And he was watching it flying down the Ashley River when it stopped and dropped just like a stone, and thought it had crashed in the river. He was trying to focus it in when it swooped in so close to him and so big, he thought it was going to hit him, and he shied back and caught his foot on the rail and began to fall. He put his arm down to catch the fall, and he didn't fall. He was rising away from the ground, and he looked around him. He's in a beam of blue light going up towards the bottom of the ship. He fainted when they reached the bottom of the ship, and he woke up on an examining table. And his story was a most remarkable story. I followed the developments from that point by telephone and trips back and forth to Charleston to interview him on the new events. The aliens finally brought him a little object, a metal bar with strange symbols on it. They turned out to be star chart symbols describing the planets in his constellation, the correct kind of planets in the correct positions, as you would see it looking from the ground straight up at zenith. And there's no charts to show those stars in those positions, and this guy had no experiences in astronomy at all, didn't even know where a reticulum was. It's in a low southern sky, can't even see it from here. And they turned out to be benevolent little grays that treated him very fine. They were careful not to disturb him or his family. They knew that his wife didn't believe the subject, although she'd been in the car with him when they swooped so low over the car. They stopped the car and got out. He could have thrown his camera and hit it. And his wife saw it close up. She never saw the beings, but he interacted with them a number of times. And he knew that they weren't devils. His church said that they, since they didn't have a Jesus Christ, they certainly were from the other side and the manifestations of the Antichrist. And his church actually began excommunication proceedings. And here's a guy who is the deacon in his church, passes a collection plate, teaches the Sunday school, helps keep the church records. He's so faithful. And he's going to be excommunicated because he's talking to alien grays. But they did. The church proceeded, and his wife at that point told him that he's going to take their little daughter, and he'd never see them again if he didn't get off the horns of the devil. They went to the church and prayed all day, and finally the pastor says, "You're going to have to get rid of all the evidence you've got, all four sets of photographs, all the automatic writing, all the negatives, all the pictures, all the little metal bar, all the things that have any relationship at all with them, or they're going to come back in." So they packaged it up, took it all down, threw it off this big pier in Charleston in the heavy surf, and the waves tore up the package, and it floated away. The aliens came back one more time. They apologized for causing such upset in his life, and they said that the little metal bar may have little intrinsic value to you, but it has great value to us. We have given such a recognition to only one other Earth human. Then he felt bad. The contacts were over.
And as far as the metal bar, I don't know if the ETs got it back or not.
They said they successfully recovered it and they had it back in their possession. Right, but right. An interesting thing there, I was in Charleston with Bill on another contact when Lee, my partner in the Swiss case in Switzerland, was at this farm with Billy Meyer, and we were talking on the phone, and he said that day Bill had told me something interesting, and Lee says the Palladians are going to break off communications for a time because they're going to a meeting in Andromeda on affairs concerning Earth. Well, that same afternoon, before I talked to Lee, Bill Herman had told me that the reticulans were going to be absent for about a month because they were going to a meeting in Andromeda on affairs concerning Earth. Same damn thing. And so we had a corroboration of an event that did take place. In both cases, they disappeared. They didn't come back for a month. And then they came back and talked about the meeting. And that was very interesting because...
What did they say about the meeting?
I don't remember what the discussion of the Earth affairs was. But the Pleiadians were interacting in some way with those little reticulan creatures who were small grays, about less than 4 feet tall.
You know, you mentioned this example with the right-wing Christian there. You told me an interesting story once about this Jehovah Witness in Brazil, I think it was.
Oh, yes.
The ETAN, I think, kind of humored the Jehovah Witness, right? Or
well, what happened is a man and woman were driving from Rio to Belo Horizonte, mm-hmm. and they were picked up car and all in the middle of the night. And when they were taken from their craft aboard the ship, they were taken into a room where they were set down on big overstuffed chairs with and metal helmets were put over their heads with wires coming out of them going to a console. The alien visitor put one over his head the same way, connected to the same console, and then they could talk to each other, and the Earth language converted for the alien's language.
Yeah, it was a translator of some sort.
Yeah, and the man in the car was a Jehovah's Witness minister. And as soon as he sat down in the chair and the alien turned the console on, he began preaching and trying to convert the alien. And the alien sat there with his hands folded in his lap and listened very patiently for almost a half an hour. And the preacher got so hoarse he could hardly talk, still trying to convert the alien. And the alien looked at him when he stopped to take a breath. He says, "Are you through?" And the preacher says, "Of course. Can't even talk anymore." And the alien took every point that he raised in his attempts to convert him point by point and successfully argued their true validity to the minister. The minister quit his position as a preacher and went to teaching yoga in Sao Paulo. So the alien converted the preacher.
Instead of the other way around.
Yeah.
You haven't slowed down much, really, Wendell. I see you around. Saw you in Laughlin. What's next on your agenda? Where are you going next?
Well, they're having a reunion out at Giant Rock in another couple of weeks.
And you're going to be there?
And I'm going out there. They invited me to come out and talk to them there.
Oh, we were there last year. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I knew a lot of people that were going to Giant Rock. You know, I've known a lot of these people for a long time. I'm 84 years old.
Well, yeah, and that was back in the 50s when you first got interested. And I guess actually might have been interested in 47, 45, because we talked about the Nazi record at one time.
Yeah. So I'm taking a case that they never heard of out there. Years ago, he's older than me, he's almost my age now, Oswaldo Gonzalez was a young man, and he began having contacts with extraterrestrials unexpectedly, and they began to give him rendezvous points to meet them. And they gave him a rendezvous location one time, and he drove there. And he got there in the middle of the night, so he crawled in the back seat of his car, was going to sleep until morning, and then see what happened. When he woke up in the morning, he was awakened by a commotion of cars pulling in all around him and people outside, and he got up and got out of his car and says, "What's going on?" And they said, "We're coming here for the Giant Rock Convention." He was at Giant Rock is where the rendezvous was, mm-hmm. and people gathered all morning, and they had a convention. And during the early morning hours of the convention, before it really started, about 11 o'clock in the morning, Oswaldo Gonzalez's craft appeared overhead, over all the people there. And a deputy sheriff hired to maintain order in during the meeting was there. He had an official camera with him. He took a picture of the object with his camera. And Bob Short's wife, Shirley, you know Bob.
Yeah,
Short,
I know, yeah.
Shirley had her camera, and she took a picture of it too. And they both have copies of the same picture that was taken that day of the craft that was visiting or came to visit Oswaldo Gonzalez. So I'm bringing Oswaldo Gonzalez to Giant Rock with me this time.
Hey, fantastic.
He's going to tell his story from the platform. We're going to show the pictures. Shirley Short's going to be there with her picture, and I think Deputy Sheriff Ackerman is probably dead by now, but we'll have copies of his picture too. So that'll be a surprise to the visitors to Giant Rock.
And they can go over to our conference section, and they'll see Retro Conference 2, and then click on there and find out more information about the date and everything. That's coming right up here at the end of April.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's always that's an interesting place. That road getting out to Giant Rock is something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, how was it back in those days, I wonder?
Oh, it was even harder then.
Oh, really?
It was an unimproved road, yes.
Okay. Wendell, it's always a pleasure talking to you. You've got a chance to plug your next event, and we do urge people to go to the Retro Conference. This is always fun. We had a lot of fun there last year.
There's going to be a lot more this year of the old-timers.
Oh, I know. That's what it made
that
fun.
Yeah, they got more than twice as many already registered.
Yeah, great. Great. Thanks very much. We'll be in Roswell from July 4th until that Sunday. The 5th, we'll actually be at the Civic Center with a table, the Jerry Pippin Show. We'll have Jane Swartley there, Roberta Scott, Dr. Rita Louise, and others. Come by and say hello to us. We'll have all kinds of DVDs and even Jerry Pippin Show UFO Files t-shirts, among other things. And a great selection of great DVDs, I must say, including the Phoenix Lights and the Fast Walkers DVD. So we'll see you in Roswell this July 4th through the following Sunday. We're here in Eureka Springs, and it's spring according to the calendar, but it's a little cool today, Phyllis Galding.
Hey, this is colder than it is in Minneapolis. I mean, we're, you know, several hundred miles farther north, and it's in the 50s, and it's in the 40s, damn near, excuse my French, freezing here.
That's
tonight,
okay,
in Eureka Springs. And I mean, this is even cold for my blood. It's my birthday tomorrow. It's the middle of April. This should not be happening.
So you probably get a lot of birthday presents. People don't forget it because it's close to income tax day.
It is income tax day.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So everybody hates my birthday.
And my daughter, Lori, was born on April 15th.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. That's neat.
So anyway, we have something in common.
Okay.
And another thing we have in common is I'm a big fan of Fate magazine, and you are too, because you bought the thing.
Right. Me and the bank. Yep. Yep. It's been
so
a labor of love.
How's it going since you've had it now for several years?
Well, it's been a labor of love. It's certainly not, I don't have any new Cadillac. I got a Chevy. I drive a Chevy and a Dodge. But in all seriousness, we love the magazine, and we receive so much positive feedback and support from our subscribers, because it's like the only thing. They give up all their other subscriptions, but they keep their Fate magazine because it's kind of like their food for their soul.
You know, if people are not familiar with Fate magazine, they need to go over to your website, because you put a lot of things on that website.
Yes, we do.
And that ought to whet their appetite for sure. And you have Galdie Press, in which you publish well-known authors. Our good friend Larry B. Bryant, you published,
yes,
some of his things.
Yes, a couple of books.
And we had a guest today, Mr. Jules.
Joe Lules.
Yeah.
Yes, he is just a fascinating person. We love Joe. He published Rulers of the
Earth. The reason I called him Mr. Jules is because he told me, he says, just like Jules, only his Lules.
There you go.
And his first name's Joe. So
yep,
I just,
yep. He's
took
pretty
a shortcut.
Yep, he's pretty sneaky that way. But he said a lot of metaphysical, paranormal experiences.
And that book just came out
3 days ago.
Yeah, and you've already sold out all the ones you brought here.
Exactly. Yep. They went like hotcakes. It's very controversial, very far out stories about his past life experiences with dealing with Jesus and religion and UFOs and the paranormal, and he ties it all together in a really fascinating experience.
And I believe it's called Rulers of the Earth.
That is correct. Yep, Rulers of the Earth.
What else do you have going on these days? I don't know whether I'm supposed to mention this, but Paul Davids tells me that the TV series is going right along, isn't it?
It's imminent, yep. I mean, we're crossing our fingers. It could be a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks before we will have a contract with a production company dealing with Fate.
Has the format been decided exactly how it's going to be?
Kind of sort of like a Twilight Zone type of thing, yes. So it's pretty much...
Are you going to explore? Is it going to be dramatized, or is it going to be more like reality TV?
Dramatized segments of things that have actually happened on TV. We don't think it'll be like real sensationalized like the reality shows, because they're like kind of phony, kind of way far out and fate deserves a little more respect and integrity, because that's really what fate's been about for the last 60 years.
And you'll be making a big announcement about that here pretty soon. Then.
Yes, we will. As soon as we get the final dotting the I's and crossing the T's on the contract, there will be a press release, probably in the Hollywood Gazette or whatever it is out there. That's
Hollywood Reporter.
Okay, that's it. Yep, yeah.
And Daily Gazette. No, it's Daily Variety. But anyway.
Whatever. Yep. We're gearing up for that.
So Phyllis Galdi will probably be zipping out to Hollywood occasionally.
Every once in a while, probably up to Vancouver, because it's, you remember the X-Files?
Right.
Yeah, the X-Files, that's where they film a lot of those kinds of shows
sure
up
do.
There.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's closer to Minneapolis. So.
Yes, it is. That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. We see you at these conferences every once in a while. You don't make all of them, but you make a lot of them.
Yes, I do. And it isn't just the UFO conferences. This winter, I was at Monster Mania conferences, Chiller Theater out in the East Coast, which are like, you know, the goths, the monster shows, horror flicks. We went to a lot of those, and it was a really fun experience because it's a whole new audience for us. We go to UFO conferences. We go to ghost conferences, metaphysical, spiritual, paranormal. So we kind of try to hit up.
And your magazine has quite a variety of all of those genres.
Exactly. Fate covers all things. You know, UFOs, Bigfoots, ghosts, angels, life after death, and I think that's part of the appeal of fate, because we try to cover all aspects.
And you're doing a good job. Did it turn out anything like you thought it would before you got involved in this magazine, or did you already work there?
I had already worked for Fate on and off since 89, and then in 94 I quit and started my own publishing company, and then I came back in 99 and worked for the other publisher, and then bought it in 2001. But heck no, it's been a lot more work and a lot less money than I thought it would be, but it's really fun.
Like my enterprises.
Yeah, but it's been fun. It's been a labor of love, and I can't imagine doing anything else.
Well, it's exactly like my enterprises. It's fun too.
Exactly. Yeah, and if you can't have fun, what's the point?
Yeah, well,
all the money in the world, you know, if you're a multimillionaire, if you hate what you're doing, it just doesn't feed your soul.
You and I talked at one time about whether or not you'd had any ghostly experiences, and I think you told me about you might have lived in a haunted house or something.
Yes, I grew up in a haunted house in North Dakota and have had just a real series of ghostly experiences ever since I was a small child. Since I was 5 years old, I saw this being in my bedroom, and I came.
Was it some translucent being, or just
it, would, light, it was or? Always standing in the doorway. I had this really small bedroom off the living room, and
it was a real person.
Yeah. Yes, and always in the living or in the doorway to the living room. The image would always be there. It was like in the movie Ghost, and it was a human form, and it was translucent, and it was like outlined in like a ghostly white light. I was scared to death because I thought it was going to come in and kill me. I was like 5 years old, my earliest recollections. I was really, really scared. I just, you know, I really thought this thing was going to come through the doorway, and I would cover up my head, and or else I would jump out of bed and go run into the other room and jump in bed with my parents. But then when I was 25 years old, my mother informed me that my grandfather died in that room. Like, duh. If they would have told me that when I was small, I wouldn't have been so scared. Because
if
I think family ghosts...
I wouldn't have went into the
yeah.
room.
Yeah, well, you know, family ghosts are okay, but you worry about some evil thing going to hurt you. But I really believe it was my grandfather there, and he was just there to watch over me and check on me and make sure I was okay.
Now as an editor of Fate, you get a lot of stories that I imagine are presented to you, and then you assign things as well. Are most of your ghost stories, are they friendly ghosts, or are they evil?
I'd say probably 80%
are kind of based on real life.
Right. I think most of them are friendly ghosts. The whole heart of the magazine is My Proof of Survival and True Mystic Experiences, people's personal experiences where a loved one has passed on, and they'll show up and warn them of a, you know, where some lost money is in some alcove in the attic, or warn them of danger, or just reappear to comfort them, like, yeah, hey, I'm okay. Life is good on the other side. You don't have to worry about me. So most of them are really comforting stories, and there's a few that are like fearsome and scary, and some negative entity appears, but you know, 80% I say are positive experiences of ghosts. But over and over, thousands and thousands of stories that people report to us are really have similar themes.
Well, I know you still go on some of the, as you mentioned earlier, you go to some of these conventions and things and meetings, but you were here one time, I think you went out to a haunted house or something.
Yes, yes.
And so you're still very interested in this subject.
Definitely.
I mean, Eureka Springs is full of haunted places.
Oh, yeah. Eureka Springs is a wonderful, special, magical city. The Crescent Hotel is filled with ghosts up there. There's been some really fascinating things happen there. There's a haunted cemetery. There's a Confederate battlefield or Pea Ridge, a national monument out there. People have seen images walking out there. In fact, tomorrow I plan to go out there and see what kind of things that we can feel out there.
And when you talk about those Civil War cemeteries, you don't. It's not necessarily at night that you see the ghost.
Not necessarily. No, you can feel the energy there all the time. If there's so much sadness and death and destruction on them, and I've always said, you know, why do people pay so much attention and put so much energy into reliving all these terrible negative energies? I think they should try to heal the earth. And maybe it's too powerful, the negative energy, but I think Civil War battlefields should be a focus of positive healing energy. Every time people walk there, they should put healing energy into the earth to stop some of that real sadness and trauma there.
It sounds like Phyllis Galdi, publisher of Fate Magazine, believes that we can use our own presence and vibes and radiated personalities, or whatever you want to call it, our charisma, whatever, our thought processes to affect maybe the supernatural. We'll follow that up when we come right back. Find out about her philosophy, really, about ghosts and supernatural things. And also, we'll ask her about UFOs, because this is a UFO conference. This conference has been going on a long time, Phyllis, so 15, 16
probably 15 years, yes, and it's gotten bigger every year. It's a wonderful, it's one of my favorite conferences.
We'll be right back. I'm Jerry Pippin. We have Phyllis Galdi with us.
Major sighting here
on the 13th of March. Weird happenings in the skies over Phoenix recently.
And no one seems to be able to explain what it was.
And now,
suddenly six amber orbs in a row, totally equidistant from each other, massive span across, pop up.
People say they saw strange lights.
There is a strange bright light seen over the skies of Arizona. It gets a lot of people wondering.
There are another 10,000 Arizonans who saw the same thing.
Eyewitnesses who saw it say it's like nothing they've ever seen before.
Last night, shortly after 8 p.m., hundreds, maybe thousands of Arizonans reported seeing a triangular-shaped object with three to
thousands of people saw more than stars in the night sky.
The mystery remains unsolved and controversial.
There was nothing there.
Winning documentary by Dr. Lynn Kita. The Phoenix Lights is now available from shopjerrypippin.com. Order now. Supplies limited. I'm Jerry Pippin, and we are at the end of the Ozarks. I don't think this place is haunted, but it might be. Have you heard any stories, Phyllis Galdi, about that?
No, I felt really comfortable. I mean, if there are any energies, I think it's Native American, and I think it's pretty comfortable. I mean, I feel really peaceful whenever I come here and stay here, so I don't think the grounds are bad at all.
One of my favorite writers, Rosemary Guiley, works with you quite a lot.
Yes.
And you guys went out to the Queen Mary. I remember I haven't talked to her since she went out there, so now I'm going to find out what happened. You were there.
Yes, we went out there for a ghost conference. I guess it was in March. And the Queen Mary is stationed, or it's dry docked in Long Beach, California. It's one of the most haunted ships in the world. Many, many psychics have professed that. They say there's something like over 600 ghosts there. So we spent 3 nights on there. I'll never stay there again. I'm pretty sensitive to ghosts, but it was just incredible. You walk on the ship, and it's like you walk into a time warp. It's like you see people from the 40s dancing around in their ballroom gowns because it was the rich, rich, rich people. That was a luxury liner where they would go over to Europe to party and play. And then in World War II, they used it for a troop transport ship. And there's just many, many things that happen. There's murders, rapes, prisoners of wars that were murdered. I mean, just natural deaths. And interestingly enough, the people that own the ship downplayed and denied a lot of the deaths and the unfortunate accidents and murders that happened on the ship. So no one really knew about them, but you step on the boat and it's like you're transported into a time warp. And I don't think it matters that it's there at Long Beach. I think it is the ship itself, the machinery, the metal, it's all stored within the vibrations are just bouncing back and forth like a radar of all the ghosts. It's absolutely incredible. Toilets flush, people are walking around, lights turn on, off and on, and you can see people in the corridors. It's just incredible.
When we talk about these things, why are some places haunted and others aren't? Or do you have a theory about that?
Well, I think probably it's the metal of the ship. It's the energy that's stored there, and there's so many people that used that ship in 40 years or so that. Uh-huh. It's something like that it was used. It was just a tremendous amount of. People that were carried back and forth across the ocean, and so much happened. It was a really intense period of time. But
we talked before we went to the break, before we came back, and mm-hmm. I had to get this Long Beach story out because it's interesting. People are interested in that. I wonder if the city of Long Beach, I guess they bought that thing at one time. Aren't they still operated or somebody
else?
Yes,
they're almost going broke. I think they're ready to pass it on. The cost of the upkeep is incredible. So it's kind of a shabby, chic ship now. It's not like it used to be. They don't have the money to put behind it. So I don't know how long it's going to be able to be maintained.
But if you want to go get the wits scared out of you, book a night at the Queen Mary.
Yes, especially during the week, it's very inexpensive. The weekends are more expensive to stay there, but yes, it's a scary, scary, thrilling place to be.
Okay, now let's talk about your theories on ghost and supernatural, period. You're in that business, so you're not going to say, or you shouldn't, I don't believe in ghosts. You obviously believe in them. You've seen them.
I have seen them. I grew up with them.
Yeah, right.
I totally
But then by the next token, you told me, it's 80% positive probably. At least
the stories in fate are.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're
not necessarily afraid, even though you're probably like me. I think I'm a pretty brave guy, but occasionally mm-hmm. I have to admit to myself, maybe this is a dangerous situation.
Yeah, once in a while you get kind of a scary, intimidating, threatening situation, but by and large, most of them are positive.
I think that when we talk about all of this, can you recognize somebody that has made something up for you to submit? Or to against a real live ghost story, is there a feel?
Pretty much so. Ernest Hemingway had what you call the crap detector,
and okay, I like that.
Yeah, I mean he could tell if somebody's bullshitting or telling the truth or not.
Right.
And there's three of us that evaluate all the stories that come in for fate. So we have what we like to think that we have the crap detector that we can recognize phony stuff when we see it. You know, when
of
you
course.
Read 1,000 articles and 800 of them are legitimate, and there's a couple hundred that are really too far out.
I really regret asking this question, Phyllis, because now everybody in the country will take this as a challenge. to see if they can get past your crap detector.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean,
hey, you might come up with some good stories, you know.
Right. Well, we try to like meditate and be really authentic, and care about all the articles that we get. So yeah, we try to really honor and value all the things that we get.
What did you think about UFOs before you got involved with FATE? Had you thought much about it?
Well, I grew up in North Dakota on a farm. It was a very lonely environment, and we had quite a lot of sightings when I was a very small child. So I grew up thinking that UFOs were like no big deal. That was just part of, I mean, my brothers saw them, my parents saw them. So as a small child, there's a light in the sky. It hovers over our car. It followed us 20, 30 miles on the highway when I was just a little girl before there were satellites or anything sophisticated. Mom and I were on the way home when I was like 6 years old, and we stopped and there was a light, you know, in the sky. We watched and zoom, and then it just disappeared. So like I never really thought anything that they were, you know,
yeah,
really anything exceptional or different.
In other words, you came here with
it's part
to
of
the
my
UFO
life.
Right.
It's yeah, part, they were part just of part
experience.
Of my life.
And you've met a lot of people.
Yes.
Since then, have you changed your minds about UFOs at all? I mean,
no. I definitely think they're around. I mean, I think there are a lot of true believers that could use some more discernment. The definition of a level-headed Norwegian, like we say, is somebody who runs a chewing tobacco out of both sides of their mouth. And you know, mm-hmm. we kind of like to be like level-headed Norwegians. We try to be really careful about not being true believers, but. But so many people have these experiences that there's got to be something to it.
So, you know, you're watching your baby grow, even though it's 60 years old. I call it your baby because now you're getting into multimedia even
mm-hmm.
more. With
yep.
You had the website, now you have the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
That looks like a pretty much of a done deal. And if something falls through, it'll probably still happen because it's pretty close to
right.
fruition.
Yep, I think it is.
And so what I'm getting at is the business side of a magazine like Fate is not easy. You have to get mainstream advertisers, and I'm in this business, so I know
mm-hmm.
that's not
mm-hmm.
always easy to do.
No, it's a challenge.
Uh-huh. So how do you see the future of the media dealing with paranormal and UFOs? I think it's growing.
I think it is, too. And we have to be aware that... as some of our speakers at the conference have pointed out this weekend, that very few companies control all the media. So it's really filtered what we're allowed to see and what we're allowed, quote, to believe. And I think these kind of conferences are really important because it shows that there's more out there than what ABC and NBC and, you know.
Right. And I think in the magazine business, it's even more concentrated.
There's, exactly.
You know, you're one of the few people out there that's independent.
That's right. Yep. We've been around almost 60 years, and we still have the same story to tell, and people are still interested in it. So there has to be some validity to it.
Yeah. You know, we're independent, too, as well. I've been waiting for that $60 million buyout. But,
yes. But do you really want it?
Because no, that's,
then
a,
they
what,
would
that's
squel-
what that's what I was getting to. What would I do?
Yeah. It squelched all the material. Everything that you've done, you know, and worked for, but all the money in the world couldn't replace the truth, because then they'd be honor-bound to Murdoch or somebody, and they would put out a lot of disinformation and false information. So
we can assure the audience that, and I think it's pretty close to a huge majority of independent media, whatever's left, they're pretty independent. They're not necessarily
yes.
doing it for the money.
Yes.
Because the big boys have kind of shoved you out or put you over
yep,
the corner.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They've sold themselves out.
And so in other words, I what I'm saying is, shows like ours, and I don't want to beat my drum right here, but what I'm saying is, you're an independent outlets, so am I. There's just not many left. And I think people ought to pay attention to these independent outlets because we're in danger.
Yep, it's a small voice, but we're a powerful voice of truth.
Oh, and you have a huge subscription rate, and people can find you on the web, and you have lots of hits. So things are doing pretty well for you, I think.
Yes, we're honored to still be here.
And you don't have any ideas of closing the door tomorrow.
No,
because we just talked about all the stuff that you're doing now. So
now we have another 60 years.
Well, we're all for you, Phyllis Galda. You're doing a great job, and we need more people like you and the media, that's for sure.
Thank you.
You got any closing comments? Not a compliment, did you?
Hey, listen, you're doing a great job, Jerry.
Oh, okay. See, she caught on.
Okay. No, we appreciate your voice in the wilderness, too.
Yeah. In all seriousness, do you have anything else you'd like to bring out?
Well, we just invite people to contact our website for a sample issue of the magazine, Fate Magazine, F-A-T-E, mag.com, or Fate Magazine, just Google us and check us out.
And we have lots of links to Fate Magazine throughout our website and on this show as well. They've been helping us out and promoting things, and we appreciate their support, and we're glad to support them. Phyllis Galda, it's always a pleasure to see you. And where are you going next? Back to Minneapolis.
I'm going to Roswell this summer in July.
Oh, yeah, we'll be there.
Yes.
We'll be there. And we're going to be broadcasting from the Civic Center, also from a place called the Cover Up Cafe downtown.
Oh, yes, so that's fun.
We'll see you someplace.
It'll be 105 degrees, but it'll be fun.
Yeah, and so we look forward to
it. I mean, as cold as it is here, I come down into Eureka Springs for warm weather, and it's colder than Minneapolis, so I'm looking forward to 100 degrees weather in Eureka, in Roswell. Well,
I have a hunch you'll get it even with global warming. This maybe July 4th is always hot everywhere, usually.
You're right.
Yeah, dude,
it'll be fun.
We'll find out. Maybe I better take a couple of jackets along with me, just in case. We had shorts and the whole thing. Remember, you went on down to see Carlsbad Cavern.
Yes, that was a wonderful. I did not get to see the bats do their great escape, but we had a wonderful time in the caverns.
That's one of our first interviews, if not our first.
Okay, it's very special energy when you go into the caves.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Phyllis Galda. This is Jerry Pippin, our own location producer is Roberta Scott, and our technical editor is Jane Swartley. Until next time, cheers.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine.
Fate
Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.